Welcome to today's J&EB Journal Club webinar. My name is Rachel Dager. I'm the Executive Director of S&EB and glad you're joining us for the first in our Journal Club series here this spring. Just a little bit of housekeeping to get us started. If you look in the GoToWebinar toolbar, you'll see the handout for today's presentation. So please download that and follow along. We'll take questions at the end of the presentation, so please type those in the question block so we can moderate those to our presenters. And when the webinar ends today, you'll be prompted to complete a short survey. We appreciate your feedback on this session as well as ideas for future webinars. And then watch for an email probably Wednesday of this week that it includes a link to our recording, the handout, and the CEU certificate that you're earning for your attendance today. So before I turn things over to our moderator, Dr. Kristen DiFilippo, who is the Assistant Teaching Professor at the University of Illinois, just a big thank you to S&EB's Research Division for helping Kristen pull this series together. We're looking at research methods, so not necessarily the results of the work itself, but actually what went into designing the research. So we're very excited about this spring's webinar series, and a thank you to Elsevier, who is supporting the Spring Journal Club so that non-members can attend. So if you have a student or someone that you know that may be interested in participating, please encourage them to register for a webinar. So I will turn things over to Kristen.
Thank you so much, Rachel. I'm excited to start off this webinar series where we're looking at research methods. Today, I get to introduce our speakers, and I want to thank them for being here. We have Dr. Darode, who is an associate professor at the UNC Greensboro. Her research is focused on examining underlying mechanisms, associated risks, and effective strategies in addressing food insecurity. She has conducted food insecurity study both at the national and international levels. Currently, she is conducting a longitudinal study understand how household food insecurity affects feeding practices and thereby growth trajectory during infancy. As a social epidemiologist, Dr. Echeverria's work examines how built environment, immigrant, and socioeconomic determinants influence cardiovascular health, particularly in Latinx communities. She has a specific interest in understanding how the social environment reinforces health behaviors such as physical activity. Her epidemiologic studies include the of complex probability samples, multi-level and cohort data, and joint effects models that can elucidate the complex process by which social determinants pattern health. Today, they're going to be sharing about their study using NHANES to understand the relationship between food insecurity, breastfeeding, and related feeding practices in the U.S. At this point, I'd like to pass it over to Dr. Darode.
Thank you. Thanks for the introduction, Kristen. Good afternoon, everyone. And as just mentioned, during today's seminar, we will be presenting on the research methodology of analyzing large data set. And specific example that we will be sharing is using NHANES based on our study example. And again, as Kristen mentioned, I'm Jigna Darode. I'm a faculty in the nutrition department at UNCG. And I will be presenting this webinar along with my collaborator, Sandra. She's an epidemiologist. So it was a perfect team to carry out this research. And before we start, just confirming there is no funding or conflicts of interest to disclose. And then in terms of nutrition educator competencies, by discussing our NHANES study, we plan to meet two competencies under the topic area of nutrition across the life cycles and nutrition education research methods. So as a first step, Let me give you an outline of our presentation. So first, I will provide you a brief background that is on what basis we initiated this study. Then I will go over ENHANCE. What is it? What is the database like? And why it is a for our study, why it was a suitable data source. Then Sandra will take over and will provide information on analysis and methodology and the results of the study. And then in the end, I will wrap up with summarizing key things that were important in accomplishing this study involving large data analysis. So with that being said, again, this webinar is based on the study that we published in JNEB recently. And as you can see from the study title, the target population of our study was infants and toddlers. Again, here, food feeding practices in the US infants and toddlers. And so to give you some background, we planned this study because I'm sure you all know too that the past few years there has been a push on gaining a better understanding on infant feeding practices in reference to the USDA initiative on including infants and toddlers in the dietary guidelines. And actually, in this 2020 dietary guidelines, now we do have recommendations for infants and toddlers. And so with that framework, and then in addition, the USDA HHS B24 project report highlighted that to address health disparities among vulnerable groups of low-income African-American and Hispanic children, we need to understand how food insecurity affects infant feeding practices, including breastfeeding. Hence, under this framework, we initiated this project with the specific objective that is listed here of examining breastfeeding initiation rate, duration of breastfeeding, and age of introduction to foods and other drinks by race and ethnicity and food security status. And our hypothesis was that food insecurity would be associated with lower breastfeeding and early introduction to foods and other drinks across all racial and ethnic groups. So with that framework in mind, here I want to show you or walk you through why ENHANCE was perfect for this study, to examine this study objective. So first of all, to begin with, ENHANCE in the full form is National Health and Nutrition Examination Survey. It is one of the several programs within the CDC's National Center for Health Statistics. And the goal of the ENHANCE is to assess the health and nutritional status of adults and children. And as underlined here, again, the key aspect of ENHANCE is assessment of both health and nutritional status. And that's why it makes this database is very popular among nutrition professionals and including public health professionals. And the other good thing about ENHANCE is that it does not only include in-person interviews, but it also includes health exam involving measurement of biomarkers, blood pressure measurement, body weight measurements. And another important thing for us from the nutrition point of view is that each and every survey respondent participant participates in one or two 24-hour dietary recalls. So there is a food intake level data too. And so with this various level of information, ENHANCE allows us to compare behaviors with biomarkers. For instance, prevalence of hypertension and daily salt intake. It is possible to analyze this kind of questions using ENHANCE. Again, I'm just giving an example. And then also the other thing is that that ENHANCE also measures food security status. So for food security researcher like me, ENHANCE is the master data set because it uses the USDA 18 item, the full survey, to analyze the food security status at the household level. So that's another wonderful thing about this data set. So continuing with why, again, ENHANCE for our study, to give you that again information, let's go back to the history of ENHANCE. So to begin with, health-related surveys has been conducted since 1960. But since 1970s, the nutrition component was added and the survey became the National Health and Nutrition Examination Survey. So that was a major turning point. Then the another important thing about this database is that from 1999, right here, from this 1999, ENHANCE started including or covering all the age groups, including infants and toddlers. And also, they do enough sampling to cover a critical life stage of pregnant and lactating women. So that is another piece that is very good about ENHANCE, that is not only includes nutrition-related information at different levels, starting from self-reported to biomarkers to 24-hour diet recalls, but the other thing is that it includes all age groups, including pregnant and lactating women. And it uses a complex stratified sampling techniques to ensure we have access to a representative sample for each age group. With oversampling of certain subpopulations to get precise estimates of health indicators on these groups. And as you see here, the oversampling is done for African Americans, Asian Americans, Hispanics, low-income whites, and 80-plus years old individuals. And this survey, this database is considered a continuous survey because every year, approximately 5,000 individuals are surveyed. But for our use, the database is released in two-year cycles. So each two-year cycle has about 10,000 survey participants. But just FYI, there is a time lapse between the data collected and released. And why I'm saying all this, because all this helps you to make the decision in terms of which data cycles you will be using for your analysis. So again, going back to the time lapse thing. So this is the ENHANCE website, a snapshot of the ENHANCE website. And if you go on the specific section on questionnaires, data sets, and related documentation, you will see these tabs, ENHANCE 2920, 27, 2018. And this is the place from where you download the data. But again, there is some time lapse because data is released in the de-identified form, and only after the clearance and approval, and all that takes time. So like you will see that 2020 tab is available. But if you check out that tab, or if you select that tab, you will see that most of the links are not active yet. That is, not all the data is available yet. But whereas you see in 2017-2018 survey cycle tab, pretty much all the level of survey components are available. You see all these active tabs or links. So just to give you an example, like first set of 2017-2018 data was released around same time last year. And by May 2020, about one third of the files were available for the analysis. So again, between the de-identification and the clearance, there is like about 1 year of time lapse between the survey conducted and the data released for public use. So now that was the general overview of NHANES. Now, again, going back to our study and looking at it from that point of view. So after identifying the study population finalizing the study objective for our study, our first initial step was to see if we need an IRB approval from our own institute. But since all the data are in NHANES are in de-identified form and has been approved and cleared by NCHS, our IRB exempted the study from further approval. And again, it must be the case for other institute too, but it's always a good practice to check with your own institute's IRB to make sure that the study is exempted or has been approved to carry out the analysis. Then after that, our immediate next step was to find out how many infants and toddlers are surveyed per 2 year cycle. This was important to know because we wanted to make a decision on how many survey cycles we will need to merge in order to have a decent sample size overall and also per major racial ethnic group. So what we found after digging, and it requires a lot of going back and forth between the NHANES website and contacting the NHANES staff, we found that the unweighed sample size for infants and toddlers were about 700 per 2 year cycle. And so based on that, we made the decision that we will need to merge at least 3 2 year cycles of NHANES from most recently available complete data set. And with that, we decided that we will go from 2009 to 2014 for our study, data cycles for our study. And then during this learning about NHANES, what we realized that for our target population, that is infants and toddlers, the proxy respondent can be mother or father or overall caretaker. And this was a little bit surprising for me because I thought that infant feeding practices, those questions are asked specifically to mother, but that was not the case. So just again, that was a surprising fact to me, and I learned it after we kept digging about where the data is stored, how it's collected, and those kinds of things. So that is the point that I just wanted to share with you all, that you learn a lot while setting up your database. Then after this, the next step was to identify which variables and which questions are of utmost importance to us for our study. So our next task was to see which questionnaires or which variables will be important for our study. And again, based on our digging and assessment, we decided to download all the questions under sociodemographics, which includes information on age of the respondent, the proxy respondent, race, ethnicity of the child, household size, then participation in food assistance programs such as WIC, SNAP, etc. Then we also decided to download diet, behavior, and nutrition questionnaires, because that's where those infant feeding related questionnaires were asked. And then we also decided to download early childhood questionnaire because it includes information on birth weight, weight status, daycare attendance, and whether the child is participating in the Head Start program. Of course, we did not use these variables for our study, but again, just the initial step was to gather all the variables and questions that are directly or indirectly related to our study objective. And then, of course, we downloaded food security questionnaire. And then also we downloaded 24-hour feeding recalls for our study population. Though again, we did not use it for this paper, but again, we downloaded all the potential variables that were connected to infants and toddlers. So again, after getting the IRB approval, making sure everything is good, then making decision on how many data cycles we will merge and which questionnaire and specific variables will be of interest to us, then the next step we did was we made this Excel sheet to see that all the questions are similar and all the options are similar or sort of identical between the survey cycles that we have chosen for our study. Again, this is a very important step for a quality check and also finalizing your data set for the analysis, because there tends to be some changes from cycle to cycle depending upon the priority of the survey for that year. Actually, I was discussing with one of the contact person and at Enhance, and that person said that each and every question cost money, and some questions are added or removed based on the national nutrition priorities and funding availability. So again, though some questions remain the same, like social demographics, they don't change. Food security, the scale is utilized each and every survey cycle. But specifically diet behavior related questions, you will see there will be some changes between one to second another survey cycle. And so it is very important to ensure that the database that you are going to use or the survey cycles you are going to use, they have those questions asked in similar fashion, and the options are also available that can be merged. Like for instance, previous to 2009, the question about at what age you started giving solids to baby was not included. Similarly, with the focus on B24 and that nutrition during the first 1,000 days, since that has become the focus, self-reported mother's pre-pregnancy height and weight, as well as infant feeding practices. The detailed questions on infant feeding practices have been added to the diet behavior question from 2019 onwards. Those questions are not available for the prior to 2019. So just to give you an example, that comparison across the survey cycles is important. And then overall for our study, these are the three behavior specific behavior questions we utilized to test our study objective. And as you see here, one is about whether the breastfeeding was initiated. Then the second question is how old was the infant slash toddler when completely stopped breastfeeding? And then third question was related to when the solids or any other liquids were introduced to the baby. So these were three questions that we used from the diet and behavior related questions. And then of course the USDA 18 item food security survey score was used, and using the standardized scoring format, we divided households into food secure versus insecure. So with that, I will hand over the methodology and the results section to my collaborator, Sandra.
Great. Thank you so much. So that was an excellent overview of the goals of our study. I just want to make sure that you can hear me, and I believe Jigna, you'll just scroll across the slides for me.
Sure. And we can hear you. I mean, I can hear you. Yes.
Okay, great. So thank you, everyone. It's a pleasure to be here. So as Dr. Dara mentioned, I served as an analyst and worked with her on the study. And so I'll be covering a lot more on the analysis component of using NHANES. So as you already saw, the National Health and Nutrition Examination Survey is a complex probability sample. So what does that mean? So in probability sampling designs, right, if we were to select a sample population to study, each population element or person, right, in our case, has a known non-zero probability of selection, allowing us to arrive at sample estimates that are unbiased or nearly unbiased for a given population statistic. So if we want to generate a mean, an odds ratio, if we know these probability sampling designs, we can account for that sampling design in our final estimate. And a corollary of that is that in a simple random sampling design, each population element has an independent and equal chance of being selected for observation. But this doesn't hold for NHANES. NHANES, as we've already noted, is a complex sampling design consisting of stratification, clustering, and weighting, and oversampling of certain population subgroups, as Dr. Jarrett already mentioned. And the just briefly, the stratification that the NHANES sampling design starts off with is usually primary sampling units, which can be as large as regions, counties, and then from there, they select within those counties or certain block groups, and then within those block groups, they select households. So that's where the layering and nesting of the sampling design occurs. And when that happens, and while that's really important for us, and it's in a really efficient design for us because it allows us to not have to sample an entire population or enumerate an entire population, it reduces costs and improves the reliability and precision of health status for some groups, it does bring us with some challenges. Next, please. So again, we're able to derive unbiased estimates with a measurable sampling error. But as you can imagine, because we have now this stratified selection of individuals that will form part of the sample of the NHANES survey, now we've violated potentially the independence of observations or IID, for those of you who've taken stats or statisticians, and equal probabilities of selections are likely violated, right? So this happens again, if we think about we're sampling within certain areas, clusters, right? That's going to induce this correlation that is violated in a lot of our regression models that assumes independence of observations. So analyzing NHANES data requires us to apply sampling design parameters, such as the weights and sample design variables that are provided to us as part of the data set. Dr. Darrett already covered the different files that are included and different variable sources, and these sampling design variables are also included, right? And so there, the issue is that we want to be able to account for the fact that in our regression model, when we fit our analyses, our regression models assume that everyone is contributing equally, right, independently. This may not be the case in these complex sampling designs, so we need to account for this. But NHANES facilitates that sampling design and gives us the weight variables. And I'll show you that briefly in a bit. Next, please. So again, the sampling design variables in NHANES are three. They are called strata, cluster, and weights. And again, that strata is a larger stratification process that NHANES undergoes by survey methodologists to select the sample participants. Then there's a clustering variable. And then finally, the weight that's assigned to each individual that's participant that's included in the sample design. And that final weight associated with each participant is based on whether they also are included as part of those specific subgroups that are oversampled. So the weighting process is quite complex, but for us as researchers and data analysts, all of this is provided to us in the data sets. There are a couple of additional caveats though when preparing your data. If, as we noted, we worked with three waves of survey data. So when merging across these multiple years, although you're provided an individual weight for each participant for each survey year, we need to account for the fact that we're merging now across multiple years, right? So for example, if we, since we merged six years or three waves of data, we divided that weight associated with each participant by three. And that's one way that NHANES allows us, right, and suggests, and these are recommendations that are given to us by NHANES, for accounting for the fact that you're no longer working with that one survey year, but that you're working across multiple years. You also have to merge across the different data files depending on your study variables. So depending on what your study question is, you are going to be forced to merge across the demographic file that exists for NHANES, as Dr. Darrett covered already, also the nutrition files that are included. There are other files that may be separated, the clinical files, if you're adjusting, for example, let's say you were doing a study on hypertension or diabetes, those are collected in a separate file. So you also have to merge across these other files, depending on your study question. And then finally, this is a more technical issue with SAS. That's the statistical software that we use for all of analysis in our study. There are obviously other software tools that you can use to analyze data. And NHANES, again, is really wonderful because they do give you the code, or at least in general, they start us off with some of the general code to analyze the data using SAS. And I think they also give you some of the syntax for SPSS. But because this, again, is really involves complex sampling and weights, I would recommend, I'm an epidemiologist by training using SAS or R now, others may use Stata. So you really need a statistical software package that can account for the survey design of the data set that we're using. So a technicality with SAS and in preparing the data is that we also need to create what are called domain variables to be able to analyze subgroups of our population. So again, this is related to the fact that because we are working with a survey design element, right, where everyone had some sort of probability of selection, in order for us to generate accurate errors, standard errors, we want to preserve that sampling design. And so in order for us to preserve that sampling design, we have to just tell SAS that the subgroups that we're analyzing, for example, when we did stratified analysis for non-Latino whites, for Blacks or Latinos, are part of this larger sampling design. And so we just have to create what are called domains or flags, where we subset that data, we code it within our data management procedures, and then use this domain statement. And I'll show you that in a minute, just to give you a sense of what the analysis looks like. Next, please. And so because, again, we're working with survey data, we have to invoke the survey procedure in SAS. I used version 9.4 for analyses. And again, depending on the software you use, you may have to use other procedures, but you have to ensure that you use the survey procedure. And these survey procedures in SAS are really phenomenal. They allow us to generate everything from means and frequencies that are weighted so that we can generate means and frequencies that are representative of the sample, right, of the US population, if that's the inference we want to make, or if we want to make inferences about particular subgroups. And then obviously they allow us to run regression models such as linear logistic survival, even mixed effects models. Next, please. And so I just wanted to share with you just a little bit of the syntax for those of you who may be interested. And again, some of the syntax you'll find readily available in NHANES. Others, depending on the study that you're doing, may require for you to work with either an epidemiologist, statistician, or others on your team to really define the models and the code that you'll need. So for example, in this top portion of the syntax, you'll see that we're invoking the survey procedure to generate frequencies. And again, here you see the design variables, you see the strata line, the cluster, the weight. And then this tables line is telling us to run the analysis for that flag we created, right? So we wanted toddlers, infants 24 months and younger. We want to look at race and ethnicity distribution by food security, and we'll run a chi-square test to see if there's significant differences. And so that's one way to generate those estimates. And then below would be the regression model that we ran. And again, this is where you see that domain line. That flag variable that we created was to, again, specify the study population that we're working with, but to signal to SAS, although we're looking at infants 24 months and younger, they were sampled, they were part of this larger sampling design. And so once we do that, then SAS will generate accurate standard errors for us. And then in that model statement, we have the outcome that we're studying. In this case, it was feeding practices, when the age when they stop breastfeeding by the food security variable that we were modeling. And just running a simple ANOVA test to detect differences. So I'm going to briefly cover the results next. And then I think we'll open, then Dr. Dara will end the session. Next slide, please. Okay, apologies if this is a little bit hard to read on the screen, but this is again an overview of these of the study results, and I will have to look on my other screen too. It looks a little bit small on mine too, so hopefully you'll have access to the journal article for those of you who may want to follow. This is table one of our study results, the demographic and household characteristics of the sample population, and we presented that for all of the study participants, and then by food security status. So we have the infant's age, sex, race, ethnicity. And I just wanna point out a couple of the more significant and substantive findings. We found that food security status differed by race, ethnicity, with higher food insecurity, for example, reported for Latinos or Hispanics, followed by African-American, Blacks, and then followed by whites and other racial ethnic groups. The other racial ethnic groups was really small, but we thought it was important to include them. And then obviously also whether they were receiving WIC, there was a significant difference overall by food security status versus non. And then the income to poverty ratio also showed, right, that more individuals reported being food insecure if they fell below 130% of the income to poverty ratio. And then following those socioeconomic profiles, obviously those that were college educated reported less food insecurity than those that had less than a high school education. Next, please. And so here are some of our results then. Table two, we're presenting the prevalence and mean days of breastfeeding and other feeding practices in the US overall and by race ethnicity. So again, remember that we were interested simultaneously in examining these these nutrition behaviors by race ethnicity, and then also the role of food insecurity in some of these behaviors. And so here you see that among those, when we looked at racial ethnic differences, who was more likely to initiate breastfeeding, a higher prevalence of initiating breastfeeding for non-Hispanic white women compared to Hispanic, and then the lowest prevalence was among non-Hispanic Blacks at 57.4% compared, for example, to non-Hispanic white women at 80%. And this is, again, initiating breastfeeding. And then another finding here, significantly different across race and ethnicity, is whether they were fed, if the infant was fed anything other than breast milk or formula before 6 months of age. There was a significant difference there, with non-Hispanic white women reporting, 87% of non-Hispanic white women reporting the introduction of feeding other than breast milk or formula before 6 months of age, the highest prevalence compared to Hispanic, and then Black women, Hispanic women at 81.6%, and non-Hispanic Black women at 80%. And then similarly, there were significant differences for duration of breastfeeding, in terms of number of days, and then infants' age when anything other than breast milk was introduced. And so again, we see significant differences across the board there for race ethnicity, with duration of breastfeeding higher among non-Hispanic white compared to Hispanics and Blacks. And when anything other than breast milk was introduced, was highest actually for the higher age was for Hispanic infants. Next slide, please. And this is when we fit now logistic regression models to estimate the odds of some of the practicing poor infant feeding behaviors. And now we focused more on food security status. And so here we're modeling these different nutrition behaviors for those who are food insecure compared to those who are food secure. So as you read this table, your referent group is your food secure group, right? So whoever reported was food secure was our referent group. And so you see that there was really no statistically significant difference across for these different nutrition behaviors. So not initiating breastfeeding, introducing other solid beverages before the infant was 4 months or 6 months, but these are in adjusted models. As we report in our paper, in unadjusted models, there were significant differences for those that were food insecure compared to food secure among non-Hispanic white women. But in adjusted models that accounted for household income and other predictors such as the income to poverty ratio, education, we see that these differences were not statistically significant. And we'll talk about that in a bit later, potential explanations for that, but we think that a big part of that was just sample size issues that we had with the study questions and our study population that may explain those differences. Next slide, please. Okay, and this is our final slide. And so again, the beauty of NHANES, right? Because we're able to fit these different types of models, we can look at both binary outcomes. So yes or no, when did you start? But we can also look at continuous outcomes. So here we're looking at the estimated differences in duration of breastfeeding in number of days by, again, food security status across race and ethnicity. And so just in case it wasn't clear for the previous slide, these results obviously are also stratified, so they're presented within each racial ethnic group. Because again, we were interested in seeing how these patterns, if these patterns differed across different racial ethnic groups. And again, although the results were not statistically significant, we find that, and what we would expect, that those that reported being food insecure had lower than compared to the food secure, had less days of duration, lower days of duration of breastfeeding, and a little bit higher among non-Hispanic Black. But again, as you can see with the p-value, none of those differences were statistically significant. We welcome feedback from others' thoughts about what these results imply for our study population. Again, I think when Dr. Darrett and I looked at these results, we really do think a lot of this was converging around sample size, some of it sample size issues for us. Although there could also be very real, right, differences by other structural factors that we weren't able to account for. Cultural practices as well that may explain some of these results. And I will turn it now back to Dr. Darren.
Thanks, Sandra. So with that, this is our last slide, and I just want to go over a couple of things that were very, very important in successfully completing our study. And the first thing that I want to let you all know that secondary data research also takes time. In primary data study, lots of time goes in data collection. But even in the large data analysis too, time is needed to dig in and finalize the analysis plan, including which survey cycles, what variables, what will be the analysis, and what are the missing cases, and how we are going to handle it. So all that requires a lot of time. Further, the other thing is that, like primary study, setting up a study objective first is important even for this large database. So yes, you know in ENHANCE that it covers all the age groups, it has information about the diet recalls, it has information about the behavior questions. But if you do not have a specific study objective in mind, then when you open the database or when you download it, it is like really a wonderland. And so having a specific study objective prior to downloading and seeing which one specific questions you will be interested in analyzing is very important. And then thirdly, interdisciplinary team is very important, and we are the classic example of it. Like, so I provided content expertise, but I did not have any idea of what is sampling. And so collaboration, content expertise were, and epidemiologists like Sandra, our team was perfect in doing such kind of analysis. So interdisciplinary team is very important. And then lastly, step-by-step approach is necessary with a set timeline and regular meetings, again, to go over the descriptive results and identify next steps. For instance, we found out that there were a lot of missing cases for the SNAP participation. And so we exchanged ideas to see how we can handle it. And based on that, we decided to use household income and group people by SNAP eligible versus ineligible. So again, close communication, set timeline, a specific study objective, and a team with expertise in epidemiologists, and then content expertise, very, very important. And with that, I stop here, and Sandra, feel free to add if I've missed anything.
That was great, thank you. I think I welcome questions from participants.
Sure.
Yeah, thank you so much for sharing your methods behind this research and how you went about the process. So if anyone has questions, please type those in the question box now. One question to start us off is, can you talk more about how you calculated your sample size?
Sandra.
Sure, yeah. So again, right, so we are working with secondary data analyses, and so there was no predefined sample size that we were targeting. So what is always recommended with ENHANES data is, if you look at their documentation, they always recommend that you at least merge two waves of data to produce stable estimates, especially because a lot of our research, right, tends to focus on different subgroups of the population that we're interested in. And so for numbers reasons, in order to ensure that estimates are stable, they recommend at least two waves. As Jigna mentioned, when we were thinking about the study and looking at the population that we were interested in, we thought that even the two waves of data would not be sufficient. And so we decided to merge three waves of data to ensure that we would have a sufficient number of participants within each of the racial ethnic groups that we were interested in studying. And so in this case, it's not a, for example, a power calculation that we would do. It's more, again, a balance of what are the sampling design issues we know about this data set, and what are the estimates we already know about the number of participants in each group that would allow us to arrive at our final sample size, and what we thought would be a good enough number of people within each for our model. And there's a whole debate about whether you should do power calculations for secondary data analysis.
So another question is, would it be the same to set up your data set using only those you are interested, such as infants and toddlers, instead of using a flag variable?
Excellent question, and I want to reemphasize. So when we're working with complex survey data, such as in Haynes, what you want to do is preserve that sampling design when you are fitting models. And so what does that mean? In SAS and any other program, you could say, I'm just going to take the entire sample, right, of the NHANES population and just delete everyone who's above 24 months of age and run my models that way. That is not something you can do with complex survey data. So it varies across the software that you're using, but in SAS, what you do is you download your entire study population and then create what we call these flags to be able to fit your models. And so what essentially in SAS, at least what you do is the flag that we created, we said flag equals one if you are in our study population. You're 24 months and younger, and you will be the study population we're interested in. Else, you're in zero. So SAS, what it will do is it will generate results for us for both everyone who falls in that one category, our study population of interest, and that zero category. So in terms of results, we ignore the zero category because those are older adults, right? Not part of the sample population that we're interested in, the study population we're interested in. This varies across different analytic software programs, but it's the same basic concept that you cannot just subset your data and run your analysis. You have to be able to let your statistical software know that the population you're interested in is part of a larger sampling design. I also work, for example, with Sudan, SAS Callable Sudan. That's another analytic software program that also you can work, that you can use with survey, complex survey data. And there you have a subpopulation line. So with that statistical software package, you don't have to create these flag statements. You have this subpopulation line, and then you say, keep toddler infants below 24 months of age. So if age is less than 24 months of age, which is really neat with Sudan. And that's another statistical software package. So again, it'll vary depending on the software you use.
Did you use the 24-hour dietary recall to define the IYFP variables?
No, we did not use IYFP, introduction to food, and I am assuming that's what is the...
Maybe the person asking the question can provide a little more clarity. So while we're waiting to see another question that was infant young child feeding practices.
No, we did not use diet recalls at all for IYFP, because if the respondent or is in infant and toddler, then those questions are asked about initiation of breastfeeding, duration, and then when the other food or liquids introduced. And so that all came under from diet and behavior questionnaire.
Another question, is data available for specific income levels? So you could stratify by levels of income, not just SNAP eligible, but in $5,000 increments, given SNAP is so low, many low income hourly workers may still not have time to breastfeed.
I think it's available, but Sandra will confirm.
Yeah, so that's another really great question. So I am a social epidemiologist. A lot of my work centers on these social determinants of health. And income is one of those that's really challenging. I'm forgetting right now offhand and in Haynes, but often what you find is that you're still really limited with the finer categorization of income. First, P people tend to not disclose their income. So you have a lot of missing data for income. So you have to do imputations. And if you're comfortable with the imputations, because they have implications, right? You have to make decisions about how you will impute for those missing data. And so sometimes, and again, I'm forgetting offhand now with NHANES, you have actually limited even measures of income. And his, in contrast, I think provides you a little bit more detail about income if you were interested. And NHANES, I think, has less flexibility with some of those income variables, but I'm happy to check and get back to the person. That's theoretically something that you can do, but just again, analytically, you would have to look at the distribution of your data, see how many participants actually report on income, then how to handle the missing data for those that refuse to answer the income question. And there are ways to handle that. I'm not saying that there aren't, but it's not as straightforward to work with the income that we have with some of these data sources.
Yeah, so to follow up on that question, another person has said income is a tricky variable as it can mean something different depending on the state. Does NHANES have the state variables?
So I've worked with NHANES in the past. One of my doctoral students actually completed her dissertation there. So here's the challenge. NHANES, as I mentioned, right, has a very defined sampling design. So they work with primary sampling units, which are usually at a region or county level. Then they work themselves down to some more specific neighborhood block groups, and then the household level where participants are randomly selected. So it is not designed to generate state level inferences, but you can do it. So it would require a little bit more of working the data. And I would recommend, and the statisticians at NHANES are also phenomenal. So for example, my doctoral student, we request, and this is not publicly available, so you do have to request it. So you would have to submit a proposal and request for access to that data, but you can request it. And they usually assign you to work with the local statistician to apply some weights for you to try if your interest is in generating state level estimates. In order to do that accurately, you would have to work with their local statisticians. And depending on your study population in question, right, it might involve merging across 5 years, depending on who you're interested in. And then also recently, NHANES did change its sampling design. And so that's why they're now in this 2-year wave cycle. So if you look at the sampling design closely, in order for them to reach certain population groups, for example, Latinos, they tend to recruit in certain regions. And so, for example, if you are concerned about having representation of Latinos in New York and other areas, you would have to look closely at who they've sampled, and how their sampling design has been laid out in the last few years at the national level, and what states may be omitted, right? So you may not have all of the states represented, at least for some groups, because of the way that they are oversampling select population. So in order for you to oversample Latinos, you may have to go to Florida, to New York, to Chicago, right, to certain regions. And so in other states, you may not have sufficient numbers. So again, it all depends on what your study question is. It is possible. NHANES is fantastic. They will get back to you. I don't know if now during COVID with everything that's happening, but in the past, they had really phenomenal statisticians that would help work with you to try to arrive at weights that you would need to apply.
Well, I want to thank you both so much for sharing your expertise today and just the time out of your day to spend time on our journal club. At this point, I can hand it back over to Rachel.
Excellent. Thank you so much to our presenters. And just a reminder, watch for an email on Wednesday of this week that'll include a link to the recording, as well as the CEU certificate and our handout. And then Journal Club, our next session is on March 15th. So we have a little bit of a break, but I know in between now and then, there's 3 other SNEB webinars. So please look at the webinar calendar, and we hope to see you online again soon. Thank you all.
Thank you.
Thanks.